Hi, welcome to Happy Hour. This is Sandy Seashore. Welcome to BBS Radio. It's the very first show I'm doing here, and I'm coming to you from San Diego, California. And my background is in comedy, and the show is based in comedy. I think we all take ourselves a little too seriously. And on the show tonight, I have coming up in a minute is Tommy. He's the talent coordinator for the Comedy Store in Hollywood, but he's much, much more than that. And at the bottom of the hour, I have a guest comedian from India named Naveed. He's going to talk about his opinion on globalization. And then I'd be really happy to take your calls. But ta-da, Tommy.
Hey.
Hey. Okay. Okay, you go.
I was going to say, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
So Tommy's coming from Hollywood.
Yep.
And my family founded the Comedy Store in 1972, and my brother is, don't hold it against me, Pauly Shore.
Oh, we love Pauly.
Yeah, you love Pauly. I love Pauly. He's my baby brother.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and he's a movie star and a celebrity.
Yep.
And this is the Comedy Store, which was actually featured on a show that Pauly had on TBS 2 years ago called Minding the Store.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Now, some people, believe it or not, have never heard of the Comedy Store. Could you give people a brief background?
Well, as you mentioned just a moment ago, the Comedy Store was founded in 1972 by actually both of Sandy's parents, Sammy Shore, who was actually a pretty well-established comedian himself, and Mitzi Shore.
Elvis's opening act.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the background of who you are, is that the fact that you come from a family that's had comedy to it your whole life. But the Comedy Store itself in 72, they started it together, but your father continued to do road work and your mom had an inclination for it. They got a divorce in 1974 and your mom actually won the club.
That's right.
And because we have a woman who's actually an artist at her core who owns a comedy club, that's why, in my opinion, magic things actually happen here.
So, you know, within the family dynamic, you know, I have three brothers.
Yeah.
And each one took what they learned from the family business and evolved. And what I did with my lessons in life was I started teaching stand-up comedy workshops in 1992.
Right.
And I haven't been able to get away from it. It seems like that's my lot in life. And I noticed, because I'm more of a metaphysical person, I noticed profound changes happening to the students, which I wasn't expecting, like more confidence and self-esteem, and a lot of people have breakthroughs. There's there's many, many stories. And a lot of the guests I'm going to have on the show are my students. And most recently, Vicki Barbalak won Funniest Mom in America. It was a show hosted on Nick at Night by Roseanne Barr.
And Sebastian was on The Tonight Show.
Oh, he was? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was on the Sebastian. The thing that you're... Probably what you do, Sandy, within the comedy realm, I think we've discussed this when we've been on the phone just as friends, is you give people the tools. You give people great tools to work with. And the thing with your comedy classes, it goes beyond working at the craft of comedy, which most of them go for. It helps them with their communication tools with other people.
Right.
I really firmly feel that because, you know, I've been sitting in the back. I'm the one that let you in here, right?
Yep.
Tommy, watch my dog.
I know.
And then
you're doing the class,
and it's great. So I really love your classes. I think your classes are a great thing about becoming, you know, checking out curiosity. But, yeah, your lot in life in comedy is you teach people and give them the tools they need in order to do it.
Now, Tommy does much more. He works with my mother to do the lineups for the Comedy Store, and there's a certain art for putting a comedy lineup together.
Oh, the way your mom does it.
Right, well, and yet she's taught you.
She has, Tommy. Everybody loves to go to comedy shows. You get three comics, and hopefully they all blend together. They don't always, because bookers don't always think of those things.
Let's name a few people that came from the Comedy Store.
Well, we have a long list, of course.
And by the way, I want to let everybody know it's the Comedy Store is haunted by ghosts, I wanted to talk about the ghosts of the Comedy Store.
Oh, yeah.
We should have a link up to, there's some photos on the page on BBS. We've been going by the seat of our pants here today. There should be a link coming up soon that will take you to ghost pictures.
Yeah, there are stuff.
There's orbs. Because, ooh, it's Halloween coming up, so I thought it would be appropriate. So David Letterman and Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg.
We have to make sure that we let people understand, though, when we say from there, like they didn't pass through here. That's not what they did. David Letterman showed up here in his pickup truck and worked here. and worked a comedy every night. Your mom saw that he had an inclination for what he said in between even more than the material did, and she made him the host for 3 years, six nights
that.
A week. And then
that.
When the Tonight Show is looking for somebody from the baby boom generation to come in and sub for Johnny, she suggests him, and he didn't just go in and do a good job. He was ready.
Mm-hmm.
So this place develops comics. And Robin Williams, he was already at some stuff, but when he came in here, that's when he got his exposure in order to get into television, all this stuff. Your mom gave him a realm to perform from. And
many,
he grew into much
people.
More, too.
I mean, there's just so many people.
Well, and the biggest one is there's two really big ones I see that the kids that come through here that aspire to comedy, the two most famous people in their mind as far as being great comics. One, of course, is Richard Pryor. He didn't start here, but he was your mom's first headliner, and you know this because you grew up here, okay?
Right.
He was the first one that gave Mitzi his name on the marquee, and he reinvented himself between 72 and 77 in here before he came out with his tape recording, which I see on HBO now, the one from 78, probably they say one of the greatest comedic recordings in history. But he developed into what he said while they're all in here, in these walls.
And the ghost, too.
And the ghost, too. And then, of course, I was going to say the other one is Jim Carrey.
Yes, I remember Jim Carrey's early years.
He started with Mom when he was 20.
You know, a lot of people start off by just doing impressions,
mm-hmm.
and before they even have material. So,
right.
You know, that's a good way to get started. And then I remember the Belly Room. There's three rooms on the Comedy Store in Sunset. And also there's a comedy club in La Jolla.
Yeah.
And so there's three rooms. There's the Belly Room, the Main Room, and the Original Room.
The original room is the one that your parents first started.
Right.
And then your mom took over the main showroom from Ciro's, I believe, in like 78.
Right.
And then she invented the Belly Room. It was actually offices. And she calls it the Belly Room because she said life begins in the belly.
And that was all women comedians.
It started that way. And then it really now really what it is it's a nurturing room. It's where people that she doesn't think are ready for the other rooms grow in there.
And she also established theme shows.
Oh, yeah.
Now taking off, you know, like Latino Night,
yep.
Gay Night, and, you know, and what is
and her it? Urban show, which is now called Trippin' on Tuesday, but it has been running consistently since 1995 here.
Now, one thing, you know, because people look at comedy and they don't really know what goes behind the scenes, and they just see the end result, but when there's so much going on the planet, I remember years ago she had the Iranian comedians. What did she do, Arabian Nights or something?
She was the first person. That's what's interesting about Mitzi. She was the first person to put together Arabic and Persian comics together pre-9/11, and she was saying then that they were going to have an important role in the future.
Interesting.
Your mom has insight like that.
Yeah, she does. Now, have you ever seen the ghosts of a comedy store yourself?
I've seen evidence of them. We have evidence here of them, like on a pretty regular basis. You know, I've actually tried to tell the psychics that have been here through, and many come through here. Like, I'm sitting here, Sandy, you know I work in this place. It's a building. But, I mean, they have, like, camera crews come in and do shows on ghost hunters and stuff. That stuff happens here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the ghost presence in here. You bring a psychic in here, and they get chills up their spine.
Yeah, Peter James used to go in there all the time. I miss him terribly. He's gone now, but he brought his people in there, and they did a lot of searching. I had a few experiences. Now, there's a mystery phone line.
Well, there is one. We have one phone line here that has no jack in any wall. It's the only one. And when it lights up, I believe we're aware that there's paranormal activity.
What are we doing for Halloween?
We're just going to run our show on Wednesday night, and then your mom usually has us put out some black and orange balloons. Nothing to obstruct, but to add a mood, and
mm-hmm.
we'll have fun like that.
It's
and you guys down there in La Jolla, near the La Jolla store, they're having a special show, too.
Who's going to be on the show?
It's going to be some of the local people, and then I'm not sure right now. I think Bobby Lee is thinking about coming down.
Bobby Lee is on Mad TV.
Mm-hmm. He's a regular guy, and he grew up in the San Diego area.
Mm-hmm.
Started at the La Jolla Comedy Store in 95, moved up here in about 90, in about 98.
Now, how do you feel, based on what's going on the planet and then based on comedy material, how do you see things changing with comedians? Because comedy is the best healer. Comedy relieves stress. It does so much. And to be a comedian, you know, it's like ice skating. You have to keep going on stage and bombing.
Yep, they have to do it over and over again. It's just like somebody who has to work out for an athletic event, like skating, like you were saying.
Now, you know, because I remember Eddie Griffin. Now, maybe people don't recognize him, but I remember when I was living up there, he would go in the main room stage every single day and practice on the stage when nobody was in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, your mom said that he was determined.
Now he's, you know, he's very savvy in the movies.
He's a great stand-up comic. I don't know if all of his movie choices have always been A+, but I've watched him. He has great beats and timing as a comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's from going in there when nobody was there. I mean,
that's one thing that he did. He had a way. He wanted to do it. Just going up over and over again and finding their true voice. What we produce here at the Comedy Store are true-voiced comics, people that have made a difference, not just done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people that your mom never passed, like Jerry Seinfeld. It's not that she didn't think he was any good. She didn't see any use for him here. She loves Larry David, and then because Curb Your Enthusiasm is busy, she says that goes to show you who is really the brains behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that's the way she works. She likes what she likes. She doesn't what she doesn't. But we've been true-voiced comics, people that are themselves, and that takes time. This group that's doing really well in here now, which people can see at the La Jolla Comedy Store scheduled regularly, they've actually been in here, a lot of them, 6-7 years.
Well, you know, one thing for sure is when you're doing comedy, you've got to learn how to be yourself because,
yeah.
You know, we don't tell jokes because anyone can just tell a joke. I turn people into characters.
Yeah.
So we take our everyday life, you know, we wear different hats. You know, like one minute you're, you know, a mother or a sister or you're going to work or whatever. And so we base a set around, you know, one of those sides of your personality. And so I see a lot of characters coming out of the Comedy Store, like Roseanne Barr. You know, you look at her and you know she's a character. And then you look like Bobby Lee, you know, from Mad TV. There's actually a photo of Bobby, my brother Paulie, and me up on the BBS website. They just uploaded that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Great.
So, and then, and you know, it's a long process.
It is a long process, but it's fun to watch them do it. And one of this is where your mom and I've met, is that I appreciate what it is to have to oversee a room of people trying to do that. You know?
Can you think of your most memorable, well, I know there's so many of them, memorable night at the club?
Just, it's very easy. It comes to me in a flash, okay? But I've been working here for 2.5 years, and walking up the stairs, it's like, is that him? Oh, my God. It's Robin Williams. When he walked up onto the stage to do his set, I had seen celebrities come in here before too, mind you, like Chris Rock and whatnot. But when Robin Williams walked on the stage to do his set, the people stood up and cheered so loud for so long, I had never heard anything like that. And Harris Pete, who was working the door time, turned to me and he goes, "That's a star."
What do you think it does? What do you think it is that makes a star, Tommy? What is it in your opinion?
It's the quality of giving of thyself to the point where you touch other human beings.
To inspire.
Yep. Robin Williams had the same thing that some really good comics have done too. He had those acting chops to draw from when it became time to do so.
I remember him in his early years. I mean, he was just he started in Shakespeare training.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he used to bounce around on top of the tables.
He has a quick mind.
Yes, he does. Yeah. What do you think of the word fame? Because, you know, I'm not interested in fame as far as, you know, it's like you have to have some kind of ego. Like, okay, Andy,
fame is it's dangerous. Let me just put that. I put next to fame in the dictionary, dangerous. Because help some people can deal with it and benefit and help a lot of people with it, and some people it hurts. Mm-hmm. True artists, it can hurt the most.
Don't you think the people like give back after they get or have?
Yeah, they have to balance like that. They do. I mean, this is the thing I swear to you while I've met here. So I've met a lot of movie actors and stuff working here too. You know, Gabriel Byrne, Brendan Fraser. I mean, they just walk in for a show, okay?
Right.
They walk in here. And one of the things I've realized about the people in the highest positions and some of the big suits, I think they're the nicest people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the middle-range people that live in Los Angeles that want to get at something that maybe aren't necessarily good people that give people the idea that it's all just a bunch of sharks. It isn't. The people that make it up to the top somehow, they're usually good people that give back. And I don't know, like Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming in now. He really is a nice guy. A nice guy.
You know, here's my actual theme for this show is that we all take ourselves a little too seriously.
Yeah.
And I know in later shows we're going to get into, you know, some actually working some comedy stuff out. You know, if people want to participate, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, give people a chance to try comedy for themselves.
Yep.
And I really think we're all so serious, and so when you start laughing, it does something to your body, your physical body. You start feeling better, you know.
Oh God, absolutely! Laughter is a healing process. And we have to use humor to bring people together. We're in a lot of tension in our world right now, but if we were to go throughout time, there's always been tension. There's just so much technology around us that makes us very dangerous to ourselves. And then also the thing with global warming, the question is raising, are we contributing? Is it happening to our planet naturally? And then there's the bottom line question, well, whether we're doing it or it's happening naturally, what are we going to do? Okay? It makes people tense. So being able to come together and laugh or learning about laughter is good for them. It's good for them.
I remember Bush in his early, before all this happened, one of his early speeches, he talked about adding humor into life. And this is before all this happened. And at least he had that, going for him.
Oh, I'm telling you, this is a misconception about him. And I'm not saying that I'm on the side of all the decisions that his administration pulling the strings behind him as a human being are doing. But he's actually a funny guy. I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get to show that part of himself because the way he's funny is in a layman's terms type way. And presidents aren't supposed to talk like that. He's more comfortable talking in layman's terms than in proper diction.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how politicians are. They decorate things and say things without saying anything. They're like the most boring sentence makers ever.
Well, there's a saying also. It says if their mouth is moving, they're lying.
But
anyway.
But here we are. So we have a war going on right now, and that's why comedy is in re-embrace. Think of this now. Now, Argus points this out. You know, Argus Hamilton has been with your mom a long time.
Yeah.
Okay? He says that the comedy store succeeded because the Vietnam War was just ending, and people needed their comedy. Okay, so here we are in war right now, and I want it to end too, but people are like, oh, my God, I need some relief. I need to go out and laugh. Now, here's the thing, too. We're in a different time now, too, Sandy. We've got television and Comedy Central and HBO specials and all this stuff, so people have can see it on TV as well. What we should always encourage people to do, what you do with your students, is the live action. It's like going to see live theater. There's an energy that goes between the performer and the audience that you feel better at the end of it more than watching on television. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of the energy that you're talking about, the action of standing in a room as a performer projects out this energy. It goes through you, and then you have energy that comes back, and the circle of energy is created, and everybody feels better.
Absolutely.
You know?
They're really recognizing it in the medical field now.
Oh, they got to start telling people. You know, and come on, what's Carlos Mencia, who's a product of this place, going out and selling out arenas? Why are they all going to see him? Because they want to laugh.
Right.
Okay? And yeah. You know what Carlos Mencia does that's beautiful is he brings Latinos and he has a white following too, and he brings them in the same room together and talks about things and get them all to enjoy being together in the same room. He knows he's got a higher calling. Your mom saw it.
Yep.
That's why she's got him to readjust his name a little bit with names from his own lineage, mind you. Okay, it's not some farce.
What was it before?
Hmm?
What was it before?
Well, when Carlos came here, his name was different. It was Ned Hortense, I believe. Yeah, but what she did is she reached into his mother's lineage, and she's Honduras, and got like his grandfather's first name and his grandmother's maiden name. And
wow.
Your mom believes in names being Melonious. So, you know, Pauly Shore goes together, right?
That's why she named me Sandy Seashore?
Yes, that's why. She likes Melonious things. She named Pauly Paul Montgomery Shore, PMS. She thinks that's funny.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, and she goes, and she says to me too, she goes, I wonder if Pauly knows I got his name off a sign above a garage that fixed cars. I drove by one day and I went, it said, Pauly. I said, I like that name.
Cute.
She's funny.
Yeah, I wanted him to be called Rocky. I thought Rocky Shore would have been better.
And she loves to tell the story about your brother Pauly that when she got pregnant with him, your dad was like, oh, come on, no, we can't do another one, no, like that. And she said she went to him, she goes, no, listen, Sammy, you need him. When you get older, you'll need him. He'll help take care of you. You're going to need him.
Isn't that funny?
And look at, well, Paulie's is very successful.
Well, who knew? He was like, the youngest one in the family. You just don't know how everybody's going to take
no.
him. You know, we have these.
And he is not, you got to admit, now this is the thing with your brother, too. He has a nice look. He's the nicest looking of your brothers.
Yeah.
And that's why he's in movies, okay? So okay. The point being, here comes Mitzi with the last one after four of you, bang, you know? But you have an artistic inclination, Sandy, and that's really what we're talking about with you and your comedy classes.
I've been the oddball in this family for sure.
It's a good thing. You are an artist, and that's why. And your classes is the center part of what we're talking about with people going to comedy shows. Your classes really are great, and you're good at it. You have a lot of experience. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, now I do. I've been teaching workshops since 1992.
I really like your book too. I think yours is really well written.
I'm working with a new project right now with the military. We're going to be doing a comedy boot camp.
Oh, they'll dig that. That's
here
cool.
Locally. Yes, and it's for active military only. And we're going to, bring it to the ships and do different things with it.
Yeah.
My book, yeah, Secrets to Stand Up Success. That's actually a workshop book. So people, my website's getting updated probably as we speak.
Yeah, I know.
And the book's online at my website. You can just go to mycomedyworkshop.com, or you can go to my name, sandyshore.com. It's on the website. This is, you know, internet radio is all new to me. I've been used to doing radio on the other kind of radio, I guess mainstream radio. But this is better because I could be myself on this show.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of exciting things I've got in mind.
Well, you never know. Some of the people that might end up coming on to your show, you might want that freedom.
So basically, I don't want to go hashing it, but back to the ghosts.
Well, we're getting close to Halloween, so it's always fun to talk to you. Why don't we go ahead and define some of the three main ones that we know of here?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, there's three main ones. The first one, his name is Gus. And in order to start to understand Gus, understand that this is not just the Comedy Store. This is a building that has been holding the entertainment since the late 20s. It's originally Ciro's. And it's never actually been closed. Your mom and dad took over the lounge, which was became the original room.
You know,
and then they still had the main room for a long time.
You know what year that was?
When it was open
Ciro's,
exactly?
When Ciro's was going on.
No, well, Ciro's is real peak. I mean, it opened, I think, in like 28. But it's real peak times of the 30s and the 40s and even the early 50s. Premier Club. In the movie Hollywoodland, which came out last year, they have the guy, George Reeve, and the lady he had his affair with, you know, played by, I can't remember her name, but played by the meeting in Ciro's. So Ciro's is an important entertainment figure, and also it was very important. Like Martin and Lewis had their first West Coast performance here. Benny Goodman performed here. Lucille Ball did Saturday Night Sets here for 18 years. Desi Arnaz and his band with a house band in here for 10 years. When the Three Stooges, when Curly Howard became sick, Shemp Howard came in and practiced them in here for 4 months before they taped. This place is legendary.
It's a historical
site. So that's where Gus comes in. Now, this is the thing that was always the rumor around Ciro's, which we can probably talk about now. I don't think I'll get in trouble now. It was always slightly owned by the mob.
Okay.
They always had an investment into it. So that they had that leeway, like we see in so many movies, of being able to bring who they want in, when they want, and putting them where. That's the reason that they have an investment,
like
right?
That's the old ways.
And there's money payout, and you're protected, and there's all kinds of things. Well,
Gus
was a hitman for the mob. He's one of the guys that went out and got rid of people when he needed to. They invited Gus in here. And this is what the psychic told us that she's gotten from Gus over several things. Gus was invited in here for dinner and a show, and he thought he was being appreciated for the work he's done. They took him upstairs and they killed him.
Yeah.
And because they killed him here, he's mad. Because he says it was unfair, because he was doing a good job for him.
Okay.
And that's why he's here.
What kind of things does he do?
He's always done crazy things over the year. He's the one that stacked all the chairs in the center. People like Alan Stevens have attested to. Okay.
Well, tell me what that was. I don't remember that.
It was someone closed the room down right after they did it. They had to go back in to get something, and every chair in the whole center of the room was stacked into a triangle in the center, perfectly symmetrically. It happened within 30 seconds. Okay.
So that's Gus.
And what Gus does in the main room is he leaves cold spots in the main room too.
Okay.
I've run through one of those. And that's when you walk through a patch of air where the air is so cold you suddenly see your breath, and then you walk another foot and it's not there. It's right in one certain spot.
There was a link we're supposed to put up that shows there's orbs flying around in the main room. It's mostly in the main room, isn't it? In the big room of the comedy?
No, and then the other one is there's a lady that haunts the basement here. I've gone down there and felt a lot of pressure on my chest. That's bad.
I don't like going down there in the basement.
Excuse me?
I don't like going down in the basement.
Well, there was a lady that did illegal abortions down there throughout the 30s and the 40s.
Oh, okay.
And they busted her and dragged her out of her, made her look like she was a criminal when she felt she was actually doing a service for people. And she's pissed. So she stays down there. And she's the one that plays the mean tricks on us.
Like what's a mean trick?
Like setting the alarm off.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Like turning the lights on and off. Me and the manager I first started here, I got really scared one time. We were leaving. He's from Florida and I'm from Florida, or where we were living at least. And we were here and we walked out of the building. All the lights were off and the lights were on in the original room. So we came back in, turned the alarm off, turned the lights off in the original room. We went outside and the lights were on again. Okay?
Woo!
Right, so we come back in this time and we call the cops. And we look around inside because we think someone's in here. Cops came over. We looked around. We couldn't find anyone. They looked around in here. We turn all the lights off. We set the alarm. They drive down the end of the driveway, and the brake lights suddenly go on, and we look up. The lights are back on inside. And so the cops came back inside and looked again, turned the lights off, did it. They went outside, got in their cars, drove like that, and the lights are back on again. And they said to us, they go, that's too much. This is too creepy. This is, you guys are going to have to deal with this. This doesn't have anything to do with a person inside. And when Dave and I went to go turn the lights off, we looked inside, they were off again. And that's what that was a lot. That actually scared me.
Do you think if the building was torn down, the ghosts would go away?
I don't know. The thing your mom worries about is she feels that in the back of the building, like deep buried into the hill, she's worried that there's things buried in there.
Oh.
Like bodies.
Interesting. You said there's three in this.
And the third one is one, the person I believe you would know better than me, Steve Trebekin, is that his name?
I think so.
Yeah, he jumped from the Hyatt.
He committed suicide. There's a hotel next to the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard called the Hyatt House, and it's a really famous hotel for like where all the rock and roll people would stay. And it's got a really long history. But anyway, a comedian, there was a strike at the Comedy Store, and he got emotionally upset, and he jumped off the top of the Hyatt House.
The last time the lady was in here, she said that he comes in here and he cries.
Oh.
And he says that I'm sorry, Mitzi, I didn't mean to do it.
Oh. I guess when you get to the other side, you realize that I don't know what you realize.
Your mom and him are close, too. You know? So it's the whole thing. But he's periodic. He's in and out. One of the other things I've kind of suggested to them that I feel, and it's just a feeling I have. I don't have any psychic ability, but I feel like this is a portal a little bit. So I feel like not only those three here, but I think other people come through.
Because the building's all black on the inside.
Yeah, it's like
so
a thing.
Much positive.
You know?
I mean, the Comedy Store revolutionized the entertainment industry.
Yep.
And there's so much energy from the walls.
It has to be that way. I believe in this stuff with us as humans. There's a energy, okay? There's just an energy, and it's left over. So I tell a lot of the comics when they walk in and they look around, or people that are starting, I say, why do you keep coming here? And it's them in the building.
Mm-hmm.
The comics begin to learn that it isn't just the people they know here. They have their own relationship with the building. Because think about it, Sandy. I'll walk around here during the day, and there'll be a comic in a couch somewhere in a corner writing. You know what I mean? They come in here for creativity.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we're going to come back with Naveed Mahboob from India. And he took my class let's just see what's going on in his world. And then Tommy will stick around and let's take some calls.
Cool.
So let's go take a break. And that's that. Okay. Hello. Okay, I guess we're not taking a break. Okay, everybody's heading out on their dinner break right now. Okay, Tommy, are you there? Okay,
I'm here.
Anyway.
I'm still. We're right on a roll. Bring Naveed in.
I don't have any buttons to push over here. I'm just over the phone. So, at BBS Radio, they're handling the board here. So
that's fine.
It's up to them to get me in and out of commercials or whatever.
Well, let's just keep ourselves going.
All right. So. I have no idea at this point.
What about Naveed? Is he there?
No, they have to actually go to a break to get him on the phone.
Okay, well, why don't we just keep going right now?
Okay.
And we'll talk about him in a minute.
And but anyway, there's a Comedy Store out in La Jolla, and that's where I teach most of the workshops.
Yeah. You do one a year up here, don't you?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Maybe once or twice a year I go up there. It's just a long drive.
I know.
La Jolla is a peninsula in San Diego. So it's a beautiful, beautiful area right on the ocean. And hopefully we won't be sliding. And we've had a lot of hill collapses, you know, here. You've heard about it.
Yep.
Anyway, I want to see, are they ready to get Naveed on the phone? Okay, I guess they're not. Okay. This is professional.
Don't worry about it.
What do you have going on tonight? I mean, there's some latest stuff, latest breaking stuff on Sunset Strip. I wonder if people are listening to this from other countries. Obviously, they are. And Hollywood is, you know, a famous name. And we live such a different lifestyle than most people.
Yeah.
To me, it's normal growing up around this. But most people, you know, It's really interesting to from the inside out.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, the interesting thing is too is in is for especially in a place like this, the Comedy Store, is most people might know one person who's the type of human being that's like a comic. But having a whole place that's full of them hanging out with each other all the time is really interesting, having all those type of personalities.
Well, what happens when people, friends say, oh, you're funny, you should be a comedian? It's really a lot different.
Yeah.
Because it's not about standing up there telling jokes, as I mentioned.
Being funny is not isolated to just a few human beings. But to someone who decides to take on the craft of stand-up comedy, it's an undertaking, but it's one that they get what we call the bug, right? They get once they get a taste for it.
Do you think it's the adrenaline that?
Yeah, it's the feeling they get from making all the people laugh.
No, what happens? You know, the idea is not. I mean, they're going to bomb. I mean, people are going to bomb. Oops! I just alerted the radio patrol. I said the word bomb. That's part of doing stand-up comedy, and to not let that stop you. I remember my very first set I did, because people usually ask me, "Do I do stand-up?" No, I do not do stand-up because I don't feel anything for it. I'm more a behind-the-scenes person. But Gallagher helped me put my first set together.
Right.
And people, I was getting a lot of laughs, but they were laughing at me because of something silly that was going on stage. But it's, you know, and I felt a little humiliated, but you really need to get over that to do comedy.
Yeah.
You've got to get used to rejection.
Yeah.
So, but once you actually put a set together and perform, your life changes forever.
Yeah, they're people are transformed by it. And they need it. They need their fix. They want to come in there and get that feeling, but not just the feeling, but they want to try to see if the ideas they come up with work. It's cool. I enjoy watching comics reach to their heights. It's very fun.
You know what's really interesting is when I grew up, comedy wasn't really a career choice.
No.
But now I see kids deciding as a career choice. It's like, look at Andrew Dice Clay's boys.
Yeah.
You know, one of them's 19, and he's opening Andrew's set.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he's his opening act. But here he is, 19 years old. I mean, who knew? But so are we having, is anybody at BBS listening to the radio show? Can we get Navid on the air? Who's waiting? Okay. I guess not.
No.
Huh.
It's okay.
It's all good.
That's the way that works.
Now, by the way, you know, people that want a career in comedy plan on doing a lot of road trips because you spend a lot of time out on the road. I mean,
that is one way to do it. I mean, for the people that are really working out here and then in places in New York, they're trying to hang around in the city that they can get work into television and film. Mm-hmm. So they do some road work, but not as much. A road comic, per se, is probably one of the people that does get a set routine together and they just go out and make money. But that also can be lonely, you know?
I remember my dad was never home.
Well, no, your dad was never home because your dad was a comic when there weren't even really that many of those, right?
Right, there wasn't.
He did a lot of shows.
He started the Comedy Store with Flip Wilson, and who else started with him? A Red Fox, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Stanford and Sons.
Yeah.
And those were the early years. Those were the real early years.
And then, of course, your dad's big one is he opened for Elvis Presley for a long time.
Yep, that was his highlight of his career.
Well, and I'm sure that Elvis was paying him well too, so he made enough finance, which probably helped him, you know, get to the home that you guys had here and the store. So your dad had a lucrative career. He really did.
And he's still going away. He moved to Las Vegas.
He's still totally sharp. Your dad.
Yep.
And, I mean, he goes and does sets with Pauly and the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a family affair.
He opens for Tony Orlando and Don.
Mm-hmm.
So he does good.
So I'm just wondering if they're ever going to call Navid. This is, maybe we can take Collins. Is anybody there? Okay. I guess they're all having dinner. Tommy, what would you say for people that are wanting to try to get in, break into comedy, what would you recommend they do?
Well, go to an open mic and satisfy getting on stage and see how it feels. You watch some other people, but you try not to imitate other people because then you're not going to be what you are, you're going to be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you'd like to, take a class like yours to It's good for getting the tools to do it. If they go to a class like yours and get some working skills, they'll probably move a little faster. They do it on their own, which is okay, just going to open mics. They might not move as fast, but they'll get there still.
Yeah, usually I cut about 5 years out of someone's life.
I just think you cut out time for them.
Yep.
They have to figure out a lot of things. But
the book's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon at this point. It's called Secrets to Stand-Up Success by Sandy Shore.
Cool.
That's a really good way to, fastest way to help you out putting a set together. And I have two show dogs, collies. One of my hobbies is going to dog shows.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nice, wonderful hobby. And they help a lot of rescue groups. I've never had show dogs before, so it's my first year. We've done 7 shows so far. It's been fun.
I bet.
And everybody in my family has dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real animal person.
Yep.
Arr. So, okay, well, and then for people that, you know what's really interesting is that there aren't any comedy clubs in a lot of countries. I know, because of the Internet, we can find out so much information, but, I'm wondering if you think how interesting it is that the countries that are having a lot of strife and problems don't have any comedy clubs.
Yeah, that's because they don't encourage people to have the freedom to do and be what they want. They want them to act
true.
A certain way. It's
mm-hmm.
control. No matter what good Lord, I'm going to get people that are Muslim mad at me. But that's not what I mean. I'm just talking about, and there isn't a lot of comedy. That's why people like Ahmed, Maz Jobrani, Aaron Kader, 3 people that your mom has all developed in here. Ahmed is Egyptian. Maz Jobrani is from Iran. And Aaron Kader is Palestinian. Them going around and being comics, they're not just getting booked here. They're getting booked over there now. In places like Dubai, which is like a vacation island for people in the Middle East.
They're doing comedy over there?
Hmm?
They're doing comedy over there on those...
On their their vacation spots, not in the main cities, no.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Maz is going to get booked in Tehran, no. But there's a place called Dubois, I think, which is my older brother has done some business there too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where many of the people from the Middle East will go on vacation, and they allow a little bit more liberty there. But this is about controlling, and not that Christianity has ever been that much better about that too. Laughter needs to be shared with people. And your mom was one of the people that pointed out to me that although the craft of stand-up comedy is new, there are people that have used comedy within their platform to elevate big messages. And one is Abraham Lincoln. He was funny.
What did he say?
He was funny. He had a dry sense of humor. So he would deliver and talk to people with humor so that they would listen. They say Plato was funny.
You remember what you laugh at.
Right.
I mean, that's what you remember the most.
Plato was one of the greatest philosophers of all time. I've read he's funny. Not funny like ha-ha trying to joke with you funny.
Clever.
He would say things in a way that was clever funny.
Witty.
And that's what Abraham Lincoln was, too. These things help people sometimes if you have a little bit of a sense of humor along with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It just puts people at ease.
Why do you think people take themselves too seriously?
Because it's a stressful life.
Well, I know we're all stressed out, all of us.
No, there's too many. There's too much information. It's making us all a little crazy.
Well, I heard somewhere in the Western days, there was something like 600 images a day. Now there's 60,000 images a day we have to deal with.
Yeah, it's just so much your brain gets overloaded.
That is the truth.
I told you I'm doing an experiment in my life, Sandy. I don't have a cell phone, okay?
You don't have email.
I don't have email. You can reach me and talk to me on the phone like the olden days, but that's it. But I don't have my brain clogged by all that. I watch everybody on their phones doing text messaging and stuff like that, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't be there and doesn't do it, but I'm just seeing what it's like not going through that, and I think I have more peace because of it.
Yeah, you do.
And then I can think about what I got to do, which is these comics in here.
Yeah, you're more like the comedy psychologist.
Yeah.
You put out a lot of fires over there.
Yeah, I try, because there are a lot of conflicting people. Come on, during the time when you're spending lots of time in here, there's these type of personalities that conflict with each other.
Don't you think it's mostly ego?
Of course it is. Insecurity, ego, all that stuff.
Where do we all get that from?
I don't know. Being a human being?
You get pounded down as adults. It's like we have to relearn the spirit of play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I don't, I've tried to do other things in my life, and I keep coming back to my comedy because it feels good to me.
Yeah, well, it's a good route to have.
It is. So you always wonder why, you know, our past, like you said this recently, that, you know, you have your world and you're only concerned in your world. You're not concerned with the outer world.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way we can keep our sanity,
yeah,
to not be so influenced by all that outward stuff.
Right.
You know, let us influence our thinking. Like, you know, I was in a store the other day, and I was standing at the door asking the teller what time the store closes, and I was reaching my hand in my purse, and she had this really frightened look on her in her eyes that she, you know, like, and I had this tiny little purse, and she was scared. And it was weird. The first thing I thought of was she's watching too many scary movies or something, or watching the news.
It's a nervous society. People are doing all kinds of weird things to each other. But the thing is, it's always been there. That's the only thing I try to act like, is everyone acts like, oh, what's going on now? Well, what's going on is we have more technology around us while we turn into Rome, okay? That's what it is. The cycle. It's a cycle. We as humans, what do you think Christianity and all that's around for? It's to make sure that we're good. I'm not talking about just the fact of what had happened, is that, you know, try to, if we put restrictions on ourselves and we're not as bad as we can be. We need laws and restrictions.
Society's putting restrictions on us.
Well, yeah, well, we have to. I mean, like laws. Those are restrictions.
What to eat, what to think, you know, what to do with our health.
Yeah, that's just what they are trying to do, I feel, society a little bit. And I mean, I know we're getting away from comedy, but they're trying to get everybody on a pill, okay?
Yeah, I noticed that.
So everyone will be happy. Let me get news for everybody. Human beings are moody, and that's the way it goes.
Good point.
Okay, we're moody, so let's just try to deal with that a little bit. I'm not saying there aren't instances with bipolar and manic depressives where medication isn't necessary. It's true. But don't run to that when you don't think you feel good. Do something different with yourself. Do like what you're saying. Go laugh.
Now, I noticed, like, on MySpace, and by the way, I just started a MySpace account. I'm at MySpace/ my comedy workshop.
You're in the MySpace world now.
Well, no, I'm just sort of have to go in there. But
no, that's
a
cool world.
A whole section for comedians.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed thousands of people want to do stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah. And then we have one of the guys that performs here, Steve Byrne, won the MySpace competition out of 500,000.
What?
Yeah, he won it. And he performs here regularly, Steve Byrne.
I didn't even know what the competition it was.
Yeah, those are like names I can throw out right now that for anybody listening that are the names of now. They may not ring a bell, but they've got enough credits. Oh, Dov Davidoff in 4 movies, Comedy Central, Tonight Show 3 times. He's like 31, 32 years old. He's now. This is where comedy's going, okay? And he's unusual, and he's great. And thanks to him, I got to meet David Lee Roth because he rooms with him in New York City.
What kind of material does he do?
He's unusual. He just jumps around. He's like a radio dial. He just jumps around and does different subjects, but he talks very honestly about them. And he's engaging. And then John Caparulo is one of our best. He just walks out with a white T-shirt and a ball cap, and he's like, oh, no, man. And he's just observant about things, and he seems to be bringing it up the way a lot of people feel, and they love it. And these are free-voiced comics. And these are people that your mother grew like seeds into the ground.
And it took them how long?
7 years.
Yep,
6 years.
Yep, that's about right.
That's when they pop, your mom says.
That's
then they can get
right.
Better if they stay at it. You know.
A lot of people can't handle it, so they it's
not
rough.
A career in it. But I still do encourage, as we talk, for people that are curious about it, to do it. To either do an open mic or take a class. They will be so happy that they did instead of staying curious, right?
Mm-hmm. But most people don't leave their homes anymore.
They can. You got to interact with other human beings or we lose what it's about. This is what the criticism is by many people, a lot smarter than me, that write about it, that people ride around in their buses and all this in their own worlds now. Okay? When I tell you I'm in my world, I mean I'm in the comedy store world, not in my own private world, isolating the whole world out, not that. I just, in order to understand and be a part of what I'm doing, I have to live and think in here, and I want to go out and compare what we're doing in here to other places. That's not the way that I work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Hollywood's a different city than any other.
It can
city
be really strange, and it can be beautiful because it's still full of human beings that are from everywhere. It's a part people forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you meet a lot of different diverse people. Instead of me having to go to all these countries to meet these people, they walk right through the door here.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of tourists.
Not just tourists. We get locals too. People that come to L.A. to try to pursue a career in this business, whether in the technical end or the production end or the acting end or whatever, listen to that, they're all. You know, they're all different. They're not all the same.
It's
an interesting world.
You know,
it really
you know,
is.
I have in the early years, it was really hard for female comedians to do stand up. And the early comedians, we had like Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh yeah.
Sandra Bernhardt. Those were the early. The
yeah, your mom really searched hard for them right now, and I really don't have tons of them right now because
it's
I'm in an in-between time.
They don't. I mean, women. I like clean comedy.
Yeah.
I think it's more creative.
Well, they're getting dirtier. We got a girl that's working out in here now named Whitney Cummings, and she's pretty. She's actually been in movies. She's on that HBO show, Tell Me You Love Me.
Mm-hmm.
But she's she wants to be a little blue. It's the way she wants to be, but not like in a slightly not shocking, but slightly shocking way.
Right.
And then I listen to all the girls around. This is why your mom isn't passing the young girls, because they all got so disgusting. I'm having to talk to them like I'm their dad. And I'm like, what?
Why do you think that shock comedy is? I mean,
because Sarah Silverman's doing so well, and they want to be like her because she's clever.
That's the role model. Then.
That's the one. She's the winner. Okay, she's the one.
I mean, I just remember, people doing just comedy, and it didn't have to go down in the toilet. So I think a lot of people, when you say comedy, people run sometimes because they don't want to go out and be abused, and they don't want to hear blue comedy. They want some really creative comedy.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, they do. Well, we have. Your mom is good at picking different types of people.
She puts the cleaner comics up earlier.
Yes, she does. Or she tells me to convey to them that if they're going up early, they got to be clean.
Oh, okay.
She's got a comic that's clever, but he's starting to get too dirty. She makes him go up or open the show, and then makes me talk to him.
And, I always do recommend my students, if they want to work dirty, I said, you make two sets. You make a clean set. You make a dirty set.
Yeah, but then Missy says to me to point out to him, don't lose your cleverness, though. Don't change into a different human being. Just don't use the cuss words. Be clever still.
Carlos Mencia used the F word, every other word.
No.
He
doesn't do that on TV all the time. Well, they beep it out. They're just doing that whole thing now. Come on. It's just the censorship is getting less and less because they're like, do you want to make the money or you want to make the censorship?
I thought it was the other way around.
Nah, the censorship's getting less and less. Oh, yeah, they put Howard Stern out there in the stratosphere, okay? He's still got big money for it, and people pay big money for it, so you can't say it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on public radio.
I think it's the younger people that like it. I think the older people are sick of it.
It depends.
I don't know.
That's just the same old thing. Your mom says that he's kind of disgusting, and she's kind of right, okay?
Yeah, he's raunchy. Very raunchy. So you're fine. Yeah, I have a lot of females in my workshop currently.
That's because they should get out there. We need a new voice for a new generation. When I say new generation, too, I'm not saying everyone has to be young. Let's convey that to everybody, that you can stand up. You can start stand up in your 40s. You've never done it before because you've never opened that door to yourself before.
Mm-hmm.
So being new at it doesn't have anything to do with being young.
She started when she was 45.
Right. And Rodney Dangerfield didn't start going back to it until 49. Right.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about comedy. There is no age, and you just find your voice and you find your audience.
You do your thing. I'm just saying, people can do it any time. We've got a lady that we're developing in here at 77.
You're kidding.
Her name is Wilda. She's been here a year. She's getting really good.
Really?
And she's getting good, and she's real different. She was a dancer here when it was Ciro's and everything. She's very interesting.
Wow.
And she's spunky, and I encouraged her from the beginning. I told your mom about it, and your mom came back after she thought about one night, and she was great. She goes, tell Wilda she can work out on one night, Monday or Tuesday, and that she can park in the parking lot, that she earned that. Isn't that sweet? So Wilda now comes up.
We have this tiny little parking lot with like 20 spaces.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not part of the driveway. She calls it the driveway. Your mom calls it the driveway. But anyway, so the thing with Lala that's great is she comes up here and, all the guys treat her really well. And the whole thing's good. Now they're looking at her for some small roles in movies. They're showcasing her to be on The Tonight Show. It's nuts.
So basically, starting over, it doesn't matter what age you are to start over.
Nope.
And that's a really good lesson in life. I mean, how many times do we all have to start over?
Yeah, people do. Or you can go back to what you are. And there's other things that come out of it, Your own mom to me has been like, she's like, she goes, you possess many talents. She goes, your true path hasn't been revealed to you yet.
But
that made me feel a lot better.
And I've asked Tommy, by the way, to make our radio show jingle up.
Yeah, I might work on that.
And, because we need a jingle. But if they are producing tonight how the show came out tonight, I don't know if the jingle will ever get heard.
Well, we'll see. I can always get it together and we'll work on it. But I appreciate you even thinking about me doing it.
I mean, I really had Navid on, and by the way, everyone, I had some comedy for everyone planned, and, Navid, I don't know,
there might be a technical difficulty. We'll get it worked out for the next time.
So, anyway, it's almost 8 o'clock, but, so, if anybody's in Hollywood area, you know, go check out the Comedy Store.
Yeah, 8433 West Sunset.
Yep.
And then down there in La Jolla, it's on Pearl Street, right?
Yep, it's on Pearl Street. It's really, we've been there since, what, the late 70s?
I think like 76.
Yep.
And it's a beautiful room. That Robin Williams said is that's his favorite room in North America.
Yep, I used to manage that room, and I have memories of the yin-yang.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a beautiful room. It's a beautiful dome ceiling, and there's ivy all over the building. It's really beautiful.
Yep. I planted that ivy, like, a billion years ago.
My goodness. Well, it's got that look that takes only time can do. It's all around the building. It drapes it. It's beautiful.
Yep, it's a bush. I remember, I remember a lot of things. Like, I remember one show, Howie Mandel. What he would do is he'd go, like, through women's purses. Then he'd take the whole audience outside, and he'd go across the street and perform his set across the street. It's just weird things like that that you just don't see people doing anymore.
Right.
I mean, really experimental things. And, you know, everybody's been to, you know, through the Comedy Store. They've been to the Comedy Store in La Jolla. It's like a vacation spot.
Yeah.
A condo by the water.
Yeah, your mom owns a really beautiful condo right by the water that she puts the comics in, and they like that.
Yep. And, it's just a nice vacation area. There's a lot of military out here. That's why I'm working on a comedy boot camp. And, you know, so I'm sorry if anybody wanted to call in. You didn't have a chance to. And I'll trust that next week things will be worked out.
That's
so
cool.
I'll be back next Thursday at the same time with Tommy. We'll have, you know, it's always this way when you first do something new. There's always things that need to be worked out.
That's cool.
Again, my website, sandyshore.com, sandyshore.com, thecomedystore.com, and that's it. And listen, everybody have a really great Halloween coming up next week, and that's it for the show for tonight.
All right, Sandy, thanks for including me.
Okay, thanks a lot, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, good night.
Okay, bye-bye.